Hello, welcome to HR Sessions. My name is Holly Reese.
And I'm Sydney Evans.
And today we have Brian Richardson with us. Brian, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm good. It's my pleasure to be here with you all.
If you could go ahead and, kind of dive into a little bit of your background here. I know we can jump into the first question, but just kind of explaining how you got to the position you're in today. A little bit about your degrees and your background.
Yeah, so I currently serve as the inaugural director for diversity, equity, and inclusion for the O'Neill School at Indiana University. I've been working at IU since around 2016. I was brought in by way of the School of Public Health. Shout out to mm-hmm. School of Public Health. they had recently created a brand new diversity office, and the director there had an opportunity to expand, and he reached out, or I was able to find the job posting, apply for the position. Prior to working for IU, I worked at a small liberal arts institution for about 3.5 years called Wittenberg University, mm-hmm. where I started off postgraduate degree as an area coordinator in charge of 3 resident halls on campus, and served as the coordinator for multicultural affairs. So it was during my time there that I found my passion for working in diversity work, mm-hmm. and it became more of a calling. So how I made sense of everything was the motto of the school was having light and passing it on. And I really embodied that of how can I take my experiences as a young professional, as a graduate student, as a undergrad, as just a Black man in America. How can I take mm-hmm. these experiences to then utilize them to make sense of the world around me, as well as provide the experience for other people, the great experiences that I did have and the ones that I wish that I could have had during my time in college, both grad and undergrad. So I was able to do some really cool things there, create some different initiatives, work with some amazing people, build some connections with the university in the city, and then kind of fast forward the story to 2016, had a chance to move here to Indiana University, met my wife. And from there, I mean, things just kind of happened. So it was, be the change that we wanted to see. We got actively involved in the community, started different initiatives, met some amazing people, had some great mentors, started to do the work, like I said, in the School of Public Health, doing diversity trainings for healthcare practitioners, early childhood practitioners, nonprofit organizations in the city, getting a grant and doing diversity training for the entire state of Indiana. And then 2018 came, and my position that I currently have was created, and the office was created. And I said, this sounds like the perfect opportunity, one where, there's a need for the work to be done. And everything just aligned with my moral beliefs and where I was within my career. And, they always say, shoot your shot. I shot my shot. Mm-hmm. And, things just kind of worked out for the best. So I've been able to do some really good things. And, again, I am nothing without, the supporting cast that has been around me. So I've been able to work with some amazing student leaders through graduate assistants, some undergrads and grads who have seen value in the work and, wanted to be a part of the change. And with many hands, it makes a load a lot lighter to lift. So mm-hmm. As far as educational pursuits, I think I took the non-conventional route. I definitely think that when I was an undergrad, I never would have saw myself doing half the things that I'm doing now. I'm a former college athlete, but I had a great coach who his mindset was, as a coach, it's my responsibility to raise good men, good role models in the community, good fathers, good husbands, good brothers. And I really tried to embody that, of realizing that I can be more than these labels that will be placed on me. So from there, it was kind of utilizing all of my experiences from going to a small school. So I was an RA when I was in school, college football player, president of the Black Student Union, active in our student government. And then even rechartered my fraternity, Kappa Alpha Psi, which was founded on Indiana University's campus. So things just kind of happened. And by the time it came for graduation of undergrad, the economy wasn't in the best shape. So grad school became an option. And I applied for grad school. I went to Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville, and I got my master's degree in kinesiology with an emphasis on sport and exercise behavior. So again, nothing to do with the work that I'm doing. but I guess the best way to sum it up is, you know, we're some of our different experiences. And, you know, I'm definitely a product of the successes and the failures and all of the lessons that I've learned in between. Mm-hmm. And they've really shaped how I do the work, my perspective on doing the work. And again, you shoot your shot. If you have the skill set and it makes sense, it aligns with who you are and what you try to do, then go for it.
Yeah, of course. So thank you so much for taking us through that. So I find it interesting that you went to like grad school instead of, you know, going for a job, just because, you know, at the time, you know, the recession. And I think, you know, right now people might find themselves in a similar situation. So I appreciate you taking us through that. I say one of the main things we wanted to talk to you about today is, you know, all things diversity, equity, and inclusion. To start off, do you think you could kind of walk us through the difference between those terms? Because I think sometimes they can be kind of mixed up or just used as kind of like, you know, like one blanket term, I guess you could say.
Yeah. So I'll start with saying, you know, that when we enter into this conversation around diversity, I think so many people like to look at things on the surface. And as a practitioner of this work, and even as a facilitator of these different conversations and an adjunct faculty member teaching on this particular topic, I think a lot of people try to water it down to, oh, well, when we're talking about diversity, we're just talking about white, black. It's so much more deeper than that, right? There's so many different aspects related to diversity itself. And to fully comprehend it, we need to take a step back and say that there are, it's a multifaceted conversation. And when we talk about equity, I think people confuse it with equality oftentimes. So that's a whole podcast within itself. and then inclusion. So this is the way I try to make sense of it, you know, from a 30,000 foot level, 30,000 perspective. Is think of a party. So we are at a party and we send out invitations to the party, and we're going to send it out to everybody because we want everyone to come to the party. So the party would be diversity. The equity piece would be that everyone received it, but that inclusion piece is really critical, right? That just because I invited everyone to come to the party, does everyone feel like they're encouraged to dance and join and be a part of the actual festivity, or do they just have access to the space? So I think when I really look at inclusion, it's how have I been invited to do the things and have the same opportunities as other people? And how am I making sense, or how am I experiencing the shared experience with other people? Right. So do I feel like I belong here? Am I treated like I belong here? Do I have opportunities to voice my concerns or my opinions or my music selection at the party? Right. and that's a very, you know, simplistic view of it. But I think that, you know, when we talk about diversity, I mean, there's diversity of thought, there's age diversity, there's ability status, there's gender, sexual orientation, identity, race, ethnicity. I mean, there's all these mm-hmm. different factors. And when we talk about diversity, I always ask, well, in what context are we referring to diversity?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I really appreciate you going through and breaking all that down. And Sydney, you might have already taken this course, but I'm currently in a workforce diversity class through the O'Neill School. So I'm learning a lot of great things as I go. And being an HR major, this is especially important in a role like this. So, you know, if I could ask, how can HR professionals incorporate the diversity, equity, and inclusion piece into the workplace?
So I like that question a lot. Because I think to do this work, it has to come from an intentional place. And then to do it effectively, we have to ask ourselves, why? Why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, so I think about the times that we're in right now, with COVID-19, social injustice, a lot of calls for action, a lot of seeking of accountability by these different entities and organizations who have put out all these different statements. What does the action look like behind these things? What's going to be sustainable past this point, right? And how do we avoid from falling victim of the performative work? And I think an opportunity that we have is to take a step back and say, well, why is it that we are prioritizing diversity? Are we doing it to check the box? Or are we doing it because it's an actual value of our organization? And if that's the answer, then solely making diversity the responsibility of one person, that's a step back, because that's too much work to just put on one person or solely on one individual office. That to incorporate DEI work within the HR profession is to invest in it. So it's looking at how we do our day-to-day things. I mean, it can't be that singular area. It has to be something that's in existence throughout the organization itself. So we're looking at the creation of policy, the revisiting of policies that have been put in place for years while certain individuals didn't have access to the actual space itself. So in the inception of these policies, they were not written with the intentions of certain people. Mm-hmm. So we have to see how existing policies need to be revisited to really respond to where we are now as a society. And if those things haven't been readdressed since the inception of the actual organization, then here's opportunities where we can do that. And some areas that I've worked with different companies to focus in on this is when we're talking about the strategic plan, when we're talking about our mission and vision, are these elements, you know, centered in those conversations? When we're talking about hiring, when we're talking about promotion or tenure, are these key elements where we as an organization say we value these specific things? And we're going to be intentional around it. So I think it has to be important. And the way in which you do it is you start to acknowledge the gaps in the areas. You seek out and do an assessment. And we have to be prepared for the answers that we may not like. So if we set out and ask about the experiences of marginalized communities, and they tell you, we have to be ready for those answers. And then once we have that information, what are we going to do to now work ahead? How can we salvage the experience of the people who are here now to prepare us for those who will come after them, right? So this is the individuals that may look like these individuals or identify the way that they do. What is it that we can learn from the people who are currently here? And how can we make ourselves better? So how can we be proactive as opposed to being reactive to everything that will come? Because it's only a matter of when, not if.
Yeah, I feel like as of like recently with kind of, you know, like the Black Lives Matter movement, everything going on, some companies have definitely been more reactive and like are now putting out things. And I feel like when they're just doing things now, like it seems like they're just doing it to kind of like keep that company image and not be, I guess, as genuine as some other companies. So it is important to, you know, have that within your values, have that, you know, be intentional with your diversity, equity, inclusion, with like literally every single thing you do. I feel like it can be like an important piece of what you're doing. So I'm glad that you brought, you know, this all up. I think it's so relevant, especially, you know, for HR majors, but I mean, pretty much everyone within a workplace, like, you should be focusing on diversity, equity, inclusion. It's not just like on HR, if that makes sense.
Because if you invest in supporting or even changing the experience of the most marginalized, then everyone actually benefits from that.
Yeah. And I don't think people like realize that, or like they're kind of maybe just focusing, you know, on themselves instead of, you know, the impact they can make on others. So,
and that can be tough too, right? So in a workplace, particularly right now, this is one of the few times where there's ever been so many different generations all simultaneously working in a workspace. So there's going to be a lot of different ways of, here's how we get to whatever these end goals are. and here's what this process looks like. Here's who needs to speak. Here's how we go about doing it. And with so many different generations, we're at this point now where I have thoughts. I no longer will sit and be in a role and let these things happen. I want to ask my questions. I have opinions. I'm going to voice these. What's going on does not or does align with who I am as a person. So I'm going to speak out and do these things. So people are becoming more conscious of how some of these decisions either support or hinder individuals. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And even in that process, I think that, it also creates a very valuable opportunity for us to do some deeper dives where because of those different generations that are all in this workplace at once, I mean, some people haven't really had these conversations before, or it's been taboo to talk about these things. So it was once acceptable not to acknowledge these things, but how language has changed and the different nuances. Now I need you to see my experience. I need you to understand why this matters, even if you're not an individual that's a part of the particular community, which is at the center of the conversation. I need you to understand why this is important and why you should be just as frustrated or just as passionate to create the change. And I think until we get to a point where we can hear and acknowledge that we are having different experiences, then we're in a position where we actually can start changing things. Because oftentimes we say, oh, well, you know, we hear about all these different terms, racism, sexism, homophobia, xenophobia. It could be an abstract thought to some who've never been exposed to it. And these can also be very divisive and difficult conversations for people to navigate if they don't have the proper tools to navigate the conversation. If the space itself isn't safe to ask some of those questions, right? And then we also make the assumptions that, oh, just because this person either looks this way or identifies this way, that here are their experiences. But we have to understand that people are not monolithic, right? And they're also not in a position where they have to be the teachers of, so here's why you should care about me and my identity. We got to do our own work. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, the role that the DEI officers play, the role that HR officers play, is how are we preparing our workforce to have these difficult conversations? Because we can't expect people to shut off certain parts of their identity when they come to work. And if it's a space where I have to shut off certain parts of my identity, how long will I actually be there? Because I don't feel seen here. And that's what we're hearing a lot of people say in regards to the workplace climate or the culture. And I think that, you know, I would really love to look further into some of those retention data and exit surveys and to see if we can make some of those correlations of the people who don't feel like they can be their full or authentic selves, or places where they have to tone things down because they aren't acceptable here within the workspace. How long do those individuals stay? And what does that truly say about the culture of the workplace?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I say it's crazy to think that, like, still, you know, people aren't, I guess, like, accepted, you know, in a workplace, or that workplaces aren't making the necessary changes. I say Holly and I are graduating soon, so we definitely hope to be, you know, a supporter and, like, an ally and, you know, to help people out and want to promote that change. So, you know, thank you so much for taking us, you know, through that and giving us some ideas. So next, we would love to hear more about the work you do, you know, at O'Neill. I see we're familiar with some of it, like some of your programs and initiatives, but if you could take, you know, the listeners through maybe, I don't know, some of your favorite programs or changes that you've made within your time here at O'Neill, that'd be fabulous.
Yeah, so my approach, you know, being new in any space is always go into it with a mindset of, I don't know what I don't know, and seek to understand. So it's very important for me to get a lay of the land by talking to the people who are here. And that was my approach when I first came into the position. So having oversight for faculty, staff, and students related to DEI, I needed to hear all of those experiences. I needed to hear the people who had the best experiences, and I needed to hear the people who were having the complete opposite. I needed to hear that from students. So whether you were online, an undergraduate, a graduate student, whether you're part-time, full-time, at the staff level, whether you're support staff, building services, entry-level professional, mid-level professional, senior-level administrator, faculty, whether you're tenure, non-tenure, lecturer, adjunct, like all of the different stages, I needed to hear those experiences. And what that allowed me to then do was start to pull out some of the trends that I see across the board. And then that really informed how we do the work and what actually needed to be addressed first. So we started to develop our priorities. And as a result of the listening tour, it really allowed me to, one, taper expectations, right? So you think that, you know, you would hire this person in, and this person is now going to fix everything. And I needed to have everybody understand that doing this work is going to take all of us. It's going to take every single person here, faculty, staff, and student, to start to change the culture. The responsibility of that change falls on all of us. It falls on the people who already understand the vernacular related to D&I. It also falls on the people who are in the middle that don't want to make mistakes, so they may not choose to do something, or they don't know what to say or where to start, so they're going to be hesitant. And even the people who don't see a value in these conversations, or the ones that haven't yet been exposed to certain elements of this conversation. For us to change, it's going to take every single person. And for me, doing the work that I do, it's addressing it with an understanding that we're all entering into, you know, conversations around diversity, equity, and inclusion from different starting points. And I have to approach the work with a level of patience to bring people along. And like I said, if it's an abstract thought or a theory to you, when we hear these different terms, I need to be able to get you to a point where you can understand, okay, here's why this matters now. And how do you do that? I mean, it's going to be dependent on the audience itself. What are the things that these individuals value? So one of the elements of our office has been creating cultural intelligence trainings. And I say cultural intelligence training versus cultural competency trainings, because I can't teach people how to be competent on someone else's culture. But what I can do is open that door so we can start that learning process, that we can start the journey to learning and unlearning so much, because we've been socialized and conditioned to see things from a certain perspective. You know, where conflicts tends to happen is when we're seeing the same thing, but we're having these different experiences. And how I've made sense of what I'm seeing or what I'm going through has been shaped through my lived experiences or things that I've been told or taught or conditioned to be led to be true by people who I trust or my environment. So if I grew up in a space where I've never seen people who think differently than me or look different than me or identify differently than me, when I first meet that new person, something's different here. It's going to cause some friction. It's going to cause some hesitation. So what we've tried to do is create these spaces where we can have some meaningful dialogue around difficult topics and areas where we tend to step back from or to say, whoa, 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 I don't understand. I don't feel comfortable here, so we're going to avoid it. But we try to take it there, and we try to provide those opportunities where we can ask the questions. So then from there, programming. My philosophy for programming is program with a purpose. And what I heard from the students is we want to talk about particular things. We want to talk about how what we're learning in the classroom applies to what we're seeing in real time in the world. So when it comes to programming, my philosophy is program with a purpose. Create the space for the students to utilize it the way in which they want to use it. Talk about the things that they want to talk about. Make the connections. So bringing in outside resources from the O'Neill School into our school. Bringing in faculty members to talk about, you know, some of these subject matter things from that scholarly perspective. Then it's recruiting. So we look at where are we posting our jobs? And being very intentional about that, right? So it's not one thing to say, oh, well, we, you know, there's just no qualified people of color or there's no qualified women for these particular areas. But yes, there are. We just have to go looking for them and we have to invest in doing that. So it's not going to be that quick and easy turnover like, oh, we went to this one place and boom, now we're a more diverse school. We got to commit to it. We got to sow the seeds. We got to make relationships and build relationships. So office supports with recruitment of faculty and staff, but even our students at the undergrad and graduate level. And then lastly, it's implementing a student grievance system. So recognizing that our school, similar to every other school, is just a microcosm of the rest of society, that things are going to happen. And what we're saying now as a school is when it happens, you now have an office and an advocate who's going to support you. So we've been able to roll that out. And those are just our four core functional areas that we've been able to establish in our first 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is amazing. And I'm glad we got to talk about like the process of you being able to speak with everyone that you will connect with in the office and getting some ideas from there. So that's amazing. And as we're going through all of these things, it's kind of sounding similar to a little plug here. Kristen Lamkin's podcast is called Uncomfortable Conversations. So you can also find that on Spotify or Anchor, which is what we use. But yeah, everything that we're talking about here sounds very familiar to what she discusses about things and different topics like this in the workplace. So just wanted to mention that. But, you know, last year, as a final question, can you explain more about what your TED Talk entails and where can people access this?
Yeah. So I had an opportunity to give a TED Talk. So it's one of those bucket list things, right? That, you know, you never think that you'll be able to do it, but you see it and it's like, oh man, it'd be great if I had a chance to do that. So it kind of captures, you know, my overall experience. So kind of going back to that first question of, you know, how did I get to where I am now? And part of it has been, you know, sharing my light and sharing my experience. So when I was at Wittenberg, in my first institution, had a privilege of creating a minority male initiative. And this was put in place to create space that while I was there in my role, I would hear students say to me things like, you know, I don't feel like I belong here. You know, I feel like I'm trapped in this box of being seen as only an athlete. And when I heard these things, it made me think back to my undergraduate experience of people seeing you and placing these different labels on you. And I wanted to be able to be in a position and do the things that was done for me. I had great mentors who saw more in me than I saw in myself and inspired me to do more than I was asked, and do more than what was in front of me. So then creating my own opportunities. So I was able to bring a group of these guys together and make this space where we would talk about identity development. We talk about the different components of leadership. We talk about time management, financial literacy, love languages, how to tie a tie, how to tie a bow tie, which fork to use at an etiquette dinner, right? How to write your resume, how to do your cover letter, the importance of public speaking. How can you control your own narrative? And I thought about all these different conversations that we were having. And then what was the outcome from these conversations? So from it, there was a conversation of, well, wow, we're doing these great things for our students who identify as males. What about those who identify as women? We need to create the same space. And again, I recognize this is a very binary conversation. Where we were then, those were the constructs that we were working in. So how that, even that program that was created back in 2013, how that has shifted is you find a space where you feel the most comfortable. And we've had some gender nonconforming students who've also found a home within either one of those organizations. And again, that's what it's about, of finding a community. And finding a community in a space where individuals felt like they didn't belong. So then from that, we would see an increase in representation of students in leadership positions. So whether it was RAs, whether it was creating their own clubs, whether it was in hall government or student government, they saw more in themselves than they did more. Mm-hmm. Their GPAs increased, right? So it's like all these metrics of showing the importance of why it's intentional, why we have to be intentional in our efforts. So I share that story to say that how we get to the TED Talk is a conversation between a community partner and I when we were there. And we took both groups into the elementary school, and we saw the impact that, you know, these college students could have on the younger children. Mm-hmm. And the smiles on their faces and hearing the confidence that was then built from our college students of, wow, this is bigger than me. Like, these kids don't know who I am, but they said they want to be like me when I'm grown, like when they grow up. So I thought that was powerful. And I thought to myself, how can we take this and apply it to an earlier group of students? So moving to Bloomington in 2016, I had a chance to meet with a local principal. I told him, hey, here's what I was working on, and here's what I was able to do back in my previous institution. I would love to be able to give back and help with that representation piece, right? So not only will these students see the great works that's being done in the elementary school by their teachers and members of the community, but I want to add to that, right? I'm another person in the community who cares about the children and their development. Here's the idea that I have. And he said, great. I just want you to commit to it. You come into their lives, I want you to keep your word. And we have for the past 4 years. So mm-hmm. The TED Talk kind of talks about that experience of taking this concept of the workforce and college students, applying it, readapting it to a new environment, and tailoring it to fit some of the needs that we saw. And I mean, I walked away even more inspired. I don't know if they got a lot from me, mm-hmm. but I got a lot from them. Seeing those kids' faces, seeing the maturity over time, and them finding value in these concepts. So the group that I work with now are young boys of color at a local elementary school between the grades of 4 through 6. And we're focusing on identity development, leadership training, finding value in your voice and finding pride in who you are as a person. Like I said, we've been able to do that for 4 years, and the TED Talk kind of talks about that journey, some lessons learned along the way, and an undertone, under message of, no matter who you are, no matter what your position is or your title, that our voices can be a critical piece to creating change. You know, so how this kind of goes back to some of the earlier questions, I mean, it takes us asking certain questions to start to put us in a position where we can start to change some things, right? So if we can see certain patterns, then we can also find ourselves utilizing our voice to bring attention to the patterns that we're seeing. Because these patterns, again, may be obvious to us, but they may not be obvious to everyone else. So by bringing awareness to it, then we can actually dive deeper into this context. So the talk itself, I love to say this, it's Googleable. So yeah, you can Google my name, Brian Richardson Jr., TEDx Bloomington, and the talk will pop up there. Mm-hmm. You also can find it on our website, along with a bunch of other resources associated with our DEI office. So mm-hmm. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, I say when we post the podcast, we can link the website as well as your TED Talk. But I just want to say, like, yeah, it's so inspiring, just everything you do. And I say I worked at an elementary school for a year, and it was just such an incredible experience. And like, just to see, like, oh God, the beginning of the year, just the kids were just like off the rockers, like just crazy. And to be able to see them like change over the year and really just like, you know, mature and kind of grow up a little bit, it's just so, so amazing to see kind of, you know, the impact you can have on kids. So I love the program that you're doing. I think it's just incredible. But yeah, that is all the time we have today. Brian, thank you so much for joining us. I know you're busy. I know there's a million other things you have going on that you didn't get to fit into our podcast. So we really appreciate the time you took today. I say, if any students want to reach out to you, can they reach out to you on LinkedIn or send you an email?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Perfect. I say, yeah, we'll be tagging Brian in our post on LinkedIn, so you can find him there as well as any other, you know, resources to access. Mm-hmm. And our Instagram is HR under sessions HR Our Instagram is HR_sessions2020. I say we post our podcasts weekly on Wednesday, so you can check that out there. But yeah, thank you so much again, Brian. We really appreciate you talking to us today.
No problem. It was my pleasure. And thanks for having this platform. I think the work that you all are doing is important. And your voices and the telling of these stories are very important. So I thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Have a
wonderful day.
Bye.